All right. I missed half of that. You're free to believe that that's coincidence if you want to. Okay? That there just happens to be Sumerian kings listed as ruling for hundreds of years. There just happens to be the origin of like all technology and everything and all cities, and everything happens to happen in the same exact place that the Bible's taking place. And you can assume that that's all some kind of crazy set of coincidences. But I'm just not capable of that. I'm not able to assume that that's all coincidence. Which means that we have a culture that we have evidence of from this region that's not biblical, but is writing about and noticing all the things the Bible is telling us. To me, that's not like a scary proposition. It's amazing. It's like eye-opening, earth-shattering type stuff. That there's science and technology and geology and anthropology that's putting all these pieces of the puzzle, and they don't even know. They don't even care. Like the guys who study ancient mythology of these regions, they think that that is the same thing as Christian mythology. It's all mythology to them. And the guys that study the Bible in depth, they don't study the mythology in depth, because why would they do that? It's mythology. So there's very little cross-referencing going on. But we might want to pay attention to it. For instance, Akkad, or Akkad, okay? That's the language that takes over. It's Akkadian, okay? The Akkadia language is a proto-Semitic language. Everybody knows what anti-Semitism is, right? They say anti-Semitic, right? That means anti-Jewish in our world. There's an anti-Semitic group over there, or that slogan's anti-Semitic, or the Nazis are anti-Semitic, right? Do you know where that comes from? The Semitic is the word that's talking about the language group. And it's the language group of this area. And these people that we're talking about are speaking a Semitic language, a proto-Hebrew. It's all coming together. And so, I mean, it sounds crazy, right? And that of course, is named after Shem, as you know, okay? Noah's son. Anyway, so I have this little thing by my bed, and God wakes me up in the middle of the night to look at this stuff, and it's mind-boggling. And the idea is, how big is God? And the answer is, much, much bigger than whatever you think, no matter how big you think He is. Because I already came into this thinking He was the biggest thing that ever existed, the creator of the universe, and I had a pretty clear understanding of how complex and big a deal God was. And He's just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. No wonder you can't look at Him all at once. I mean, no wonder. So, cross-referencing all of this stuff to get us a clear view of what's happening. And you'll see over here, I gave you some stuff that nobody else knows, okay? It's not my fault, okay? But the Neolithic Stone Age, coming out of that into the Chalcolithic, the Copper Age, and then we emerge from that. These are some periods from this area. This is Mesopotamia broken down into periods. The Ubaid period, the Uruk period, the Jemnet-Nasser period, and the early dynastic period. These are the periods in which these things are recorded. Now, there's going to be a flood, okay? And then after the flood, people's ages are going to start to decrease, and the time frames are going to start to make more sense. So our last sort of hero of the non-biblical region being Gilgamesh. Gilgamesh is going to rule for 125 years. He's going to be a very big deal. He's ruling in Uruk, the biggest city in the world. Almost all archaeologists and scholars believe Gilgamesh was real. Okay, he's obviously kind of like a King Arthur-y person where they've added some legend to it. But they really believe there's pretty good evidence because there's portraits and there's statues of him. And there's many cross-references. They talk about cross references, and they go back to who I think is probably, I think that Enmay Barksy is probably the Akkadian name for Cain. I know that's insane. I realize that. But he takes over Elam. He builds a giant city. It's the same time frame, and he rules for 900 years. Now, I don't know. Maybe I'm insane. By the way, in Sumerian king list, Enmay Barakji, okay, the 900-year guy that takes over Elam, he names the city after his son, Aga of Kish, and his son rules for 625 years and knows Gilgamesh. And we just studied last time how Cain went into this area, took it over, and named it after his son. If you look at the list too, you'll see these really long years, and you'll also see a very similar number of people. Now all the names are different because it's a different language. But, I mean, maybe I'm crazy, right? So, geology and archaeology are fairly clear that there was a great flood. And atheist archaeologists and anthropologists and people don't even really argue much that there was a great flood. So my point is, does all of this come together on the same page? Like, is there an interconnection here? And the reason I wanted to talk about that before we jump into tonight's lesson is because tonight we're covering the very beginning of Genesis 6, and it's the hardest part of the whole Bible. It's the most difficult and scary and freaky part of the whole Bible. So we have to decide where we're at. If we are, you know, we think all this is nuts. If we are, you know, think that this is a completely separate set of deal. Or if we're going to try to look at the interconnectivity and figure out, you know, who knows if there might be things that we can find out. It just seems very strange to me. And you can correct me if you don't believe this, but doesn't it seem strange that like bronze and writing and the idea of cities and government and law is all from this place? In the world, like if you look at China and the New World and everything, I mean, isn't that strange? Doesn't that seem to connect to the story of Genesis? I mean, people think that sounds crazy. I think that lends even more credence to Genesis. I think it makes Genesis even stronger. I think it makes some of the things we've been studying sound less and less crazy. But you can take all the time you want to study that stuff because you're going to have a blast. And so Sargon, and if things sound a little Tolkien, it's because he studied this too and took a lot of his names for Lord of the Rings from this. That's why it sounds so Tolkien. He'll actually use those. They actually make, in Lord of the Rings, they make the powerful goblins in Uruk. They're called the Uruk-hai. That's Tolkien having fun. And no one else is smart as him, so they're like, whatever, they don't get it, okay? He's laughing and smoking his pipe and, you know. But the Uruk-hai are the big mean goblins. Anyway, technically orcs, I'm sorry, for those of you who are bigger geeks than me. Good luck. Okay, so I'm studying this Semitic-speaking culture. I'm studying this ancient Samaria. I'm studying this place called Akkad, and they take over Samaria about the same time that we have this leader named Gilgamesh, and we have this king, the first king of Akkadia, whose name is Sargon, and this is all from the Sumerian tablets, right? And I sound completely insane, right? Pastor Andy, will you read the first verse of Isaiah 20, please? Let's see. Sargon is the first king of Akkadia according to all of this stuff that I've been talking about, but I'm a nut job, right? Obviously. What does Isaiah 20, verse 1 say?
She says, In the year that the commander came to Ashdod, when Sargon, the king of Assyria, sent him, and he fought against Ashdod and captured it.
Thanks. Thank you. That's the Sargon who came off a tablet, and it says it in Isaiah. And now suddenly I don't look so crazy. Right? Because that's just what it just said. So with enough time and enough energy, you can cross-reference. By the way, that's probably Sargon II, his son. But with enough time and energy, you can cross-reference this. And you're probably going to find that some of those names and some of their, you know, titles on some of that Sumerian king list is going to make sense. Now, Gilgamesh living around the time of the flood, meeting the guy who built the ark. I mean, you're going to have to deal with that. You're going to have to either decide that the Bible is mythological and that they took that Sumerian mythology and ran with it, or you're going to have to say, holy crap, there maybe was a guy named Gilgamesh who met Noah. I mean, we're way out there, obviously. We're not in the normal realm of let's paint the kid's wall with Noah's Ark story pictures. We're obviously not in kindergarten anymore. But you're going to have to figure that out because that's real. That's true. So you're going to have to figure out what happened. What I believe happened is biblical, but it sounds crazy. What I believed happened was there's an earth, and on the earth there's these people, and these people, there are fallen angels and demons running around this place, and that they're creating cultures that people are worshiping these pantheons of demon gods, and that God comes to, you know, to a man who he makes named Adam and sets up Adam and Eve in Eden and tests their resolve. He tests their obedience and they fail. And then they go out into the world. And God is the all-powerful creator God of the universe. And his name for lack of a better name is Yahweh. And he is the God of the universe. And he is going to send his son to save us all a few thousand years later. But right now, he is going to take care of his people. But his people are coming out of a place that is called Eden, where they were designed to live forever without disease. And they're not coming out of there normal. They're coming out of there with these extremely long lifespans, with some type of immunity to disease or some type of toughness that's going to keep them around for 900 years, 10 generations in a row. They're very difficult to describe as human. Now, later on, they'll be very easy to describe as human. Abraham's obviously a very human guy. Okay? He got all kinds of human flaws and human problems. But Seth, not so much. Okay, 900 and some years of life, setting up entire civilizations. But things go horribly wrong still. And we talked about that a couple classes ago, about the idea that because they don't have a system to talk to God, Cain talked to God. God said, hey, Cain, you know, where's your brother? I mean, Adam talked to God. By the time we get down to son's great, you know, great-great-great-great-grandson of Cain, Lamech, Lamech is still talking about Cain avenged sevenfold. So we know that they're keeping this culture. We know that they're keeping this understanding of God. But basically, it's gone awry. And it's gone awry on both sides. And it's because they have knowledge of good and evil. It's because they're out in the world. We gave you all kinds of options on the board of the last couple classes. Are Adam and Eve the very first humans, or is that a separate story? And there's reasons for both, and we talked about all those ideas. Either way, this is very strange, and this pre-flood time frame is very odd. there's people living really long, there's lots of craziness going on, and there's the establishment of bronze and cultures and cities, and all these things are new. And that's all true no matter who you talk to. No matter if you're talking to an atheist, a geologist, or if you're talking to an anthropologist, or you're talking to a biblical scholar, that's all true. So that brings us to the time right before the flood, when things get as bad as they can possibly get, right? And so for that, we go to, and I almost have it memorized, but we go to Genesis 6, and we read, and there are going to be some pretty significant questions in about 5 seconds, but here we go. We're just going to go through the first couple verses. Now it came to pass, when men begin to multiply on the face of the earth and the daughters were born to them, that the sons of God saw the daughters of men, that they were beautiful, and they took wives to themselves of all whom they chose. Now, this is going to upset God. Okay, he says, and the Lord said, my spirit shall not strive with man forever, for he is indeed flesh. He's going to make his days 120 years. And then it says, there were giants on the earth in those days. And in half the translations and the older translations, it uses the word out of the original translation, which is Nephilim, okay, or Nephilim. There were Nephilim on the earth in those days, or giants. We're going to talk about that word in a second. Also afterward, that's a big problem, that little thing between those two commas. And also afterward, when the sons of God came to the daughters of men who bore children to them, those were the mighty men of old, the men of renown. Okay, this is the Bible. This is scriptural. It is in every version in some form or fashion. And it is clear. Now, there is a possible discussion here, because you have the term the sons of God and the term the daughters of men. Now, the daughters of men we can get pretty quickly. That's human women. Okay, we got that. Sons of God is a little more difficult, right? Because if you go through most of the research, the way that that term is used in most ancient scripture, it's referring to angels. Okay? Now, there's a couple other possibilities. Remember how we had this possible theory, this line of Eden, where God had made the world in Genesis 1 and filled it with people and everything, and everybody was doing their stuff. And then he took the ground and made Adam. And then he made Eden and put Adam there. And then he took the rib and made Eve. And they're in Eden. And then they have Cain and Abel and then Seth. And that's a special person. That's a special group. That's not the rest of the people. And I've talked to a bunch of people about this the last few weeks, and they have all kinds of different input on that. One person said, well, this makes sense. And I said, what about sin? Because doesn't sin come from Adam? And he's like, yeah, so if you go with that, there's two or three possibilities. One is the sons of Adam go out in the world and interbreed with everybody, and that's how sin gets in the world. But another person said, what about this? What about Eden being, the point of Eden being obedience? They're being tested with obedience. They've got the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. If they eat the tree of knowledge of good and evil, they're disobedient. That's their test. But all these people out here could already have it. They could already have sin and disobedience. Okay. That's another whole thing I never thought about. It's a complete different angle. But we don't have those direct answers. But what we do know is that these people called sons of God, well, that means they could have been from that lineage. So two main possibilities. Sons of God means the lineage of Seth and Adam and Eden. Those are the sons of God. That would be if you wanted to have people on the planet doing stuff, which would be preferable to the option, which is the majority opinion, which is that's angels. Because if that's angels coming down to earth to be with human women and creating super people, well, you can see why this is the scariest, freakiest part of the Bible. And you also probably want to ask, did it stop? and why and how and everything else about this problem. But in this story, no matter who those sons of God are, they're obviously different from men. They're different from, it doesn't say men, it doesn't say sons of men. It says daughters of men and sons of God. So these people are obviously different. Whether they're a lineage coming out of Eden or whether they're angels, they're obviously different. Now, there's support for both camps. The support for the non-angelic camp is Jesus mentions angels not getting married. Angels don't really necessarily have that same type of human relationship, sexually or whatever you want to call it, right? So maybe that's not that. But what we need to deal with is the fact that there is an offspring here that is basically a race of, and we have a word, and this word gets translated as two different things, and the two different things are a dark spiritual concept and giant. Those are the two different types of translations. And there's a dark spiritual concept to it, but there's also this idea of giants. Now, the reason everybody tends toward giants, meaning really big people, the reason people tend toward that is because of Goliath. Okay? We all know that David fought Goliath, and that Goliath was from the Philistines, and the Philistines are actually offspring of some of these guys. Okay? And it's a long story, but it's traceable biblically. So you've got these guys, they're actually dealing with this fish god, which is a half, it's a long story, but that all could be related to this period of time. I've seen people go all the way to one side, and I've seen people go all the way to the other. One scholar, PhD guy who studies this subject, goes as far as to believe that some of the imagery of old is true. Like I'm talking about like the hawk-headed people or the people with the goat bottoms. He believes that the dark spirits that are doing this are creating bodies to be in. I'm just saying this is way over here. I don't necessarily believe this. He believes that they're creating these bodies to be in, these angels or whatever. And because they're coming in as spiritual beings, they need a physical body so that they can procreate, right? And unfortunately for us, this matches all mythology about all the, like Zeus comes down and is a swan and has sex with a girl and makes a demigod and blah, blah, blah. All that mythology that we studied as mythology, it fits here in a way, which is super creepy and crazy. But and on the far other side, it's much more simplistic. The answer is, these are the sons of God. These are the people that are following God, and they live a long time, and they're extra strong, they're extra powerful, they're extra big, and they're being with these regular human women. So this is kind of supporting our number two idea that we had over the last 5 weeks, where the number two plan was Eden was special, and there was a line of Eden, right? So you did a little research. So what did you discover?
Something in those days, this is a little bit before what I studied, but it says that the Seth was given Asia, and Japheth was given Europe, and Ham was given Africa.
And you're talking about Noah after the flood, his sons.
Right.
Okay.
And Seth, it says in the study, was a pure line of Adam. And if I could just read a little bit here, it says, sons of God were men who possessed, this was Ibn Ezra, but this other guy, Genesis 6, to have referred to some secret doctrine. This guy, Levi ben Gerson, in promoting the concept that the sons of God, were the older generations who were closer to physical perfection, as Adam and Eve were perfect. Though these are variations of this view, the primary idea was that Adam and Eve Eve's perfect attributes were passed down from generation to generation. However, as each generation passed, the perfect physical attributes diminished.
So this is support for that line of Eden idea.
Okay. Thus, the early generations were mightier than the succeeding ones.
Yeah.
The physical decline of the younger generations continued until the flood, to the point that their days were numbered, as stated in Genesis 6:3. It was immoral for the other generations to consort with the younger generations, whereby puny women begot usually large children.
Ouch.
Nephilim was even considered a stature. Okay.
And I've seen some of this information as well, which is about the height of people and stuff like that. So,
but could I just
go ahead.
Just a little bit here? It says early Christian writers such as Justin Martyr, Clement of Alexandria, mm-hmm. believed that the sons of God in Genesis 6:1-4 were fallen angels who engaged in unnatural union with human women, resulting in the begetting of the Nephilim. Modern Christians have argued against the view by reasoning on Jesus' comment in Matthew 22 that angels do not marry, mm-hmm. although it also refers to angels in heaven. St. Augustine subscribed to this view based on the orations of Julius Africanus, mm-hmm. Which refer to the sons of God as being descendants of Seth, the pure line of Adam. The daughters of men are viewed as the descendants of Cain. Variations of the views were also received by Jewish philosophers. So what I get from this is that the good people of Seth intermarried. They were the rulers and hierarchy of that age, mm-hmm. the line of Seth. And they intermarried with Cain, which was the lowest, I guess, because of his sin, mm-hmm. And it says that, and then that even the line of Seth suffered the same demise as the rest of the people in the flood, because they married into, and that goes to the New Testament where it says, don't be unevenly yoked with an unbeliever.
Right. Okay, let me simplify, because it's really complicated and we've had a lot of discussion for a period of weeks. And basically, the first step is making a decision between two things. And those two things are, when Genesis 1 expresses how the earth was made, it talks about God making all the animals and then he makes Adam, and it doesn't say that. It says he makes man and woman in his likeness. Okay? And then they go out and rule and to take over the earth. In Genesis 2, he takes Adam and makes Adam out of the earth and makes Eden and puts Adam in Eden and then makes Eve from Adam, and he makes the animals from the dirt and shows them to Adam, and Adam names them. So you've got to figure out part one for yourself in prayer and supplication ceaselessly. You have to figure out if you believe that Adam and Eve, we go back to the beginning of when mankind was created, so Adam and Eve are the first two people on the entire planet, period. Or, if Adam and Eve were made separately, after God was resting on day 7, after he already made the whole planet and there's people in it, and he makes his people. Now, the answer to that question is going to provide the answer to this question, right? Because either we're dealing with Adam and Eve having Cain and Abel. Cain kills Abel. Cain goes out and starts to create his world. And then Seth is born. And then Seth creates the line of Adam. And in that one piece of information that we were just discussing, this interbreeding could be the sons of God, could be the line of Adam through Seth. And the daughters of men could be the daughters of the people from Cain. Now, that's one thing. But that is going to run into, besides probable genome issues and things like that, that's going to run into some problem. The main problem with that is Cain's wife. Because Cain goes out, gets a wife, builds a city. They also mark Cain so that he doesn't get killed out there by random people. Why would you mark him if it's all family? So you've got questions that you have to answer. But one of those two is true. Either Adam and Eve are the very beginning, two people, or they were a special project of God and other people were out there. Sumerians and Akkadians and everybody and Egyptians are out there and God's doing his thing in Eden. If we go with that number two prospect of Eden being special and other people being out there, then the sons of God here could refer to people coming out of that line and not necessarily Cain's interbreeding with Cain's kids. It could be any human women. Now those two ideas all keep us on the planet, which is nice. But the other idea, which has been around since the beginning, and he named several of the church fathers who were very influential and important in our understanding of Scripture. But the idea here is that sons of God, if you do research in the language, is typically a reference to angelic beings. Now, if that's true, then we certainly understand how we get Nephilim or super people from angels interbreeding with human women. That makes sense. Either way, we end up with these mighty men. They're giants, or they're powerful, or they're crazy, or whatever you want to, however you want to look at it, but they're not normal humans. They're more powerful.
But what if an Adam and Eve were 9 feet tall?
Right, we don't know. We don't know the size of Adam and Eve. If Adam and Eve are put over here in Eden, and God creates Adam out of the dirt, God could create anything. Adam could look like or be like anything. He says it's like him, you know, maybe it's in his image. But God's huge. I mean, you understand what I mean? Adam could look like anything. Adam could be 9 feet tall, 10 feet tall. We assume because of kindergarten, right, and paintings on the walls at the church youth group, we're assuming that Adam and Eve were normal people. And they one day realized they were naked and threw on some fig leaves or whatever, but they were pretty much normal. That doesn't say that. They don't have to be. If God made Adam and Eve separately from the rest of humanity, they're just doing their thing and they're all away from God and he wants his special creation, his people. They could be 10 feet tall. No wonder when Cain leaves and walks over to Elam, they're like, whoa, you know, we don't know what that looked like. We know we built a city. You know, did he do it by himself? If he did it by himself, he probably was a giant, right? Built a city.
Well, Adam and Eve could be angelic in a way too, because they were created by God.
Yeah, they were immortal and without sin and without any type of disease or anything else. Well, we have a line. The crazy part is it's not just the story of Adam or Cain or Seth, and they weren't and they're just weird. That would be fine. That would be fairly easy to explain. But we go all the way 10 generations of guys living 900 years, and they're all living around the same amount of time, which is very odd. You don't have 10 generations that live the same amount of time, right? People will die off. People will rule for 6 years. The next guy rules for 60. The next guy rules for 15. It's random because people get killed. And think about if they were relatively normal people, relatively, and they went out into this world. This is the origin of war. This is the origin of bronze. It's the origin of military campaigns. I mean, somebody's going to kill them unless it's really, really hard to kill them. Unless you can't really kill them. And none of them were killed. How do you have 10 generations where nobody gets killed? We know that everybody gets killed, right? We know Cain kills Abel. Then we know Lamech kills a guy for wronging him. Over on Cain's side, everybody's killing everybody. Why is nobody killing Seth or his son or his son or his son or his son? Is it because you can't really kill him? Or is it just really, really hard to kill him? But they lived 900 some years. It means they didn't get diseases either. One of them didn't die from pneumonia at 212. These guys all lived 900 and some years. It's exact. Isn't that a little odd? Something about them is special. Well, now we're all the way to Noah. Yes, sir.
Yeah, just an observation. I don't think we can